This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, February 4th, 2008.
Good afternoon, everybody. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Thank you for joining us in today's meeting of the Employee Assembly, February 4th, 2009. At this time, I'd like to call for any late additions to our agenda. Okay, we do have a guest speaker today. If our guest speaker arrives and is ready to go, we're going to pause the meeting and carry on. Okay, thank you. Our employee elected trustee, Beth McKinney, cannot make it today, but she did pass on some information for me that I'll share with you. Beth did attend the Board of Trustees meeting in January. It was in New York City, and the focus of this meeting was on the budget, of course.
Surprise. Yeah.
She wrote a big paragraph. I'm only going to pick out some highlights, and I'm just going to read her wording here. In a group meeting, they discussed having the trustees' orientation also include a more in-depth orientation of our government system. And then she goes on, President Skorton is very committed to using our governance system to maximize everything that happens, keeping everyone informed and everyone in the loop. He's also looking for our advice, criticism, discussion on issues, and how to do things even better. The last meeting we met with him concerning the budget, when he called our meeting, he asked the same questions. And then finally, during the large board meeting, he reiterated to the board the importance of our keeping as many staff employed as possible and keeping Cornell a great place to work. So I thought I'd share that with you, and that was President Skorton speaking with the Board of Trustees. Possible forums, we'd ask Beth to try to grab a couple placeholders, places, and times. She's working on some things. We can't give her more information until we have a reason to have a forum, a theme, topic, guest speaker. But she does have a couple leads. I'm going to go on. That's all she has. I'm going to go on as far as what President Skorton asked from advice, criticism, discussion on issues, how to do things better. From the winter retreat, we talked about this, and I took all our notes and I put them together in a document that was part of the EA's president, the chair's report, mid-year report to the president, and that has been passed on to Mary Opperman, because I also asked her about holding the president's spring address, bring the president face-to-face with employees once again. Nothing extravagant, but one more time, and we felt it was needed. So we'll get the results on. We'll see if that's a possibility. So that's moving along. I'll let you know as soon as I hear back from her if that's going to be able to be a reality or not. Any questions about any of this as I move on? Okay, move on to a report from our student assembly representative.
Hi, I'm Emily Cusick. For those of you who need a reminder, I don't have a name tag, but recently the SAA passed a moratorium on all new student groups, which was in response to partially the financial crisis that's going on and partially because the Office of the Assemblies and the Office of the Student Activities Organizations, Registered Student Organizations, RSS, sorry, they were feeling very overwhelmed. There's over 900 student groups right now, and every semester it's something like 80 pop up. Some go out, fade out of existence. More keep coming up. So it's a good idea until we can consolidate groups, get them under control. Caused a lot of unrest from some of the students who think that their right to make new student groups is being violated. But I think generally in the long run that this is a good idea for us. So.
Emily, how long is that moratorium?
Oh, it's just till the end of the semester.
Okay.
After the review is done, will it be
more difficult to form student groups, or just wait and see what happens?
We're trying to make new guidelines for forming student groups so we don't have bureaucratic waste, like two groups doing exactly the same thing that aren't working together. So there's going to be a group forming new guidelines, working with the administration, and that's basically why we're doing the moratorium, so we have time to do the guidelines without new groups coming in.
Okay. Thank you, Emily. We'll move on to our report from our UA representative.
Okay. You want to go ahead?
No, I was only there for about 15 minutes.
Okay. I wasn't there, but
I do have some information.
Okay.
Sorry for not being there.
There were three resolutions that were passed and going on to President Scorton. Two of them, I don't know if they involve us much here, but I'll just read them real quickly with the titles. There's a resolution to staff additional members to the University Hearing and Review Boards. There also is a resolution to specify term limits for the Committee on Family Services and Subcommittee on Child Services. And these, I assume, would be online, so people can look at them if you've got any interest. The third one I'd like to talk about just real quickly, because it does involve us, is a resolution establishing the University Sustainability Committee. So they have put this resolution forward to the president. It does state the membership of the committee that there would be a whole slew of different people, and I'm not going to go through them all, but from an employee standpoint or staff standpoint, it does say two staff members, one of whom is appointed by the Office of Environmental Compliance and Sustainability, the other by the Employee Assembly. So we'll be looking to try and staff this committee, obviously. And real quickly, just so people have an idea of it, in case you're interested in sustainability, you want to be on this committee, the USC's charge shall be to advise, consult, and communicate on matters related to the development and implementation of community sustainability issues, policies, and programs. The USC shall offer advice, counsel, and recommendations to the UA for its deliberation action on issues and topics raised by the committee.
So if that becomes... So the committee is not formed yet?
Not at this point, but I want people to be aware of it. It's to the president at this point for action.
Do you have anything else? Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, Pat?
One will be appointed, and the second will be appointed as well by the EA. That doesn't mean it has to be a member of the EA, just someone that the EA selects. Is that what
correct.
I understood?
Correct, yes. The way this reads, yes. It's not going to okay. Play something more.
Okay.
Good.
Bill, quick question.
Sure.
Was there any discussion about how this new group would coordinate with the President's Climate Commitment Implementation Committee and the Cost and Efficiencies Committee?
I honestly couldn't tell you that, not being there. I don't know what discussion took place.
Because it would seem to me it was... Emily's report, we just heard how a proliferation of committees, they need to sort of coordinate and figure out how they can relate to other groups that are already doing that. Other groups that are already involved in that work so that there's not effort lost and that everyone's not working in a silo.
Definitely. I don't remember the groups, but I know the meeting before this one, they did have two or three different groups tied to sustainability, so we'll come in and talk about what they do and just that, how we coordinate. And so I know they've been thinking about that and working on the effort. I don't know the full extent of where this is going to go, though.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
I just want to say real quick, and I hope whoever we appoint has some expertise and some knowledge, because, I mean, sustainability is sexy right now, and I think a lot of folks think they really have a handle on it when you're dealing with building projects and stuff. It's complex work that can't be explained in a soundbite. And I hope that the person that we empower is going to be a really educated representative on all the issues that the dean does for a living. So, hey.
Thank you, Jerry. Speaking of sexy, our... our guest speaker of the day is here, Dean. We have met with him before, familiar face, and he's given us a presentation on sustainability.
Particularly focused on the climate action plan and where
climate
we're
action.
A push of the President's Climate Commitment Implementation Committee is that we need to start putting out there communicating all the stuff that's been going on behind the scenes. We're spending thousands of man hours regurgitating, cogitating on different options, but we're not really communicating it out to the general public yet.
Okay.
So this is supposed to be the first round of that.
Okay.
Start off with a pretty little graphic our consultants have been working on, some visualization backdrops. And
is that the new building there?
they pitched their whole presentation when they were trying to get the job. The graphics of the clock tower, so they're still putting it in. But I want to start off with just talking about the scale of it. But from the staff perspective, you've asked some people to do some really hard thinking and spend a lot of extra time on top of their already busy schedule. So as I go through this, to think that there's close to 80 people that are working on this. Some of us are on three or four of these subcommittees, so there's lots of extra time going into this. Just a reminder of how this is working. The President's Climate Commitment Implementation Committee has Hugh Long and Tim Fahey as our two co-chairs, and then we have a small group that's under that representing a variety of different constituencies. Mr. Dennis can pipe in any time because he's had to listen to a lot of this. And then Steve Byers in our Office of Environmental Compliance and Sustainability is acting as a project manager, which means he gets to kind of oversee all of the staff people who are working on this as well as the consultants, which is a large effort. We got $500,000 almost from NYSERDA in matching funds just for the outside consultants because of the 600 universities plus that are doing the President's Climate Commitment. Nobody has taken the lead in how do you think this through? And so we really put ourselves out there, not necessarily where we're comfortable, but we're out there in a position where there's lots of other universities looking at us. I'm doing the ID Plus conference call at 2 o'clock today, and they're all asking, can you give us more information on how you're solving this problem? What are you doing with cost of carbon? Other consulting groups are asking us how they're going to do, if they're going out to consulting with all these universities, how do they convince your administration that there's a life cycle analysis that has to go into this, that there are going to be regulatory issues that all the universities are going to be facing, particularly the new administration, much faster than we had anticipated. So we have to change the way we do business as well as just, you know, we're going to wave the flag and say we're going to be carbon neutral someday. These are the subcommittees that are working on different areas. I'll go through really quick. Green development, and that's what you do with new buildings. How do you design them to be lower impact, lower energy use, reorient the buildings to get solar gain. And we have a new university architect who, that's the first thing out of his mouth is, well, why is it oriented this way? You know business has changed. In the future, we'll see some changes there. Energy conservation, Lanny Joyce has been doing this for decades in Jim Adams. But it's the first time we're really looking at it on a holistic system and not looking at individual buildings as a component that we're going to go in and fix or we're going to spend some money on. We're going to look at all of the buildings, which ones we need to say we're just not going to fix because they're going to go away someday in 20, maybe 30 years. But we've never sat down and actually thought that through. These are the best practices that we have to roll out across the university. Fuel mix and renewables. The combined heat and power plant will get rid of almost half of our coal use. So we're going to have a huge drop, and I'll show that in the next slide, in our carbon footprint. But we all know that's a huge expense, and with the economic situation right now, do we have the money to do the next big step? Even if we line these up and come up with the best solutions for Cornell, is that a 5-year timeline? Is it a 10-year timeline? Is the payback good enough? The trustees will say, we'll find that extra money is better than some of our investments right now, so let's invest in more energy efficiency or renewables. Transportation, David Lieb and a company has been doing lots of stuff. You know, transportation demand management, you've probably heard presentations by them every couple of years. They've really pushed the TIMS and the T guys to say, yeah, this is the plan if we were doing a 5% reduction in single occupancy vehicles. What would happen if we really tried to push it 10 to 15% and go beyond that? You know, that's going to cost a little extra money, or that's going to really require us to work with the county and the city. It's way beyond what anybody's been talking about in the past. So they have a really hard road because it's behavioral changes and it's stuff that's outside of our jurisdiction to really fix. Carbon offsets. Have ever talked about carbon offsets and their validity. There's a lot of arguments now, and there's no single system that is, you know, a gold standard that everybody thinks works. Do you invest in a forestation project in Africa, and that allows us to clear our guilt for the carbon that we produce, is that best use of our dollars, but it also is it have a really meaningful long-term impact. Right now, the university stance has been our energy efficiency and our offsets that we do on campus are much more valuable than if we spent money this year and pay somebody else to do something greener, and next year we pay again and the year after. It's not in our best interest as universities to be here for a long period of time to participate in those systems. Not that we won't have to eventually, just right now we have to do what's going to have the most impact on this bang for the buck. And also, how do we educate on these things if we just bought our way out of it, like some schools are doing? You're not really teaching people that this is going to be hard. There's a decision that we have to make and change our behaviors. Sustainable Decisions Group has been doing a number of brain exercises on what we have to do differently as far as the decision-making process. And we talked to Steve Golding about this is an exercise that we're doing for how we decide which energy efficiency projects, but could it go beyond that for some of our other capital investments and things like that, to use what some people call triple bottom line accounting. I don't think we're using true triple bottom line accounting, but to look at carbon offsets, social impacts, environmental impacts in the analysis of this, not just single bottom line. And nobody's done that well. There's no system that just says you can compare what the impact is on the community and what the impact on the lake is in a numerical fashion compared to here's its payback over 5 years. It's much softer, squishier calculations. So we're trying to figure out what the university would accept, what is simple enough that people can understand it, and also something that, if it's a $100,000 project, we don't spend $50,000 just thinking about what the right thing to do is. It's something that we can simplify that everybody can think through, because it's not something that's just going to come out of a climate action plan and do it alone. It should be something that's a little bit broader in scope. We've also had some discussions about cost of carbon, which is going before the trustees, and that, again, nobody else has done in higher education, is actually say, we will be regulated for our carbon emissions someday. If we're building a building that's going to survive in more than 50 years, it's going to have an energy cost that's greater than what we budgeted for in the initial planning. So we have to put that cost in when we figure something out. If it's a vehicle purchase that has a 15-year life cycle or a 7-year life cycle, what is that addition for a cost of carbon? And we've worked with our consultants and a number of outside agencies, asking Clinton Climate Initiative and the World Resources Institute for their best practices to set a dollar amount that we put in all of our planning. Not that we're going to charge the department extra money this month for the energy costs, right? But when we decide to do something that's going to have a life cycle that's more than 2 or 3 years, shouldn't we think about that's what we need to do? We need to put a cost on it so we're not caught off guard when we're 5, 6, 7, whatever it is. So that's going for the trustees next month, and we'll see how that goes. I can promise.
Could you say more about what you mean by a carbon cost?
Sure. With federal regulations that are in the pipeline now, they're looking at how do you charge an emitter of carbon dioxide. So if it's a natural gas plant, they pay less. If it's a coal plant, they're going to pay a whole lot, and that's going to change our fuel mix. That's what it's designed to do, is to drive change. It also gets passed through to the customer, so maybe your NYSEG rate goes up half a cent per kilowatt hour because we're trying to improve the efficiencies, we're trying to change the fuel mix. There's a whole bunch of things that would be put into that system. And each of the policies that are proposed are really different. I've only sat in about 16 hours of presentations on this, and I still don't understand all the variables.
Potentially. And then could this be used? So Cornell wants to purchase another vehicle for the fleet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at the different options out there. And this one has a higher carbon.
Mm-hmm.
We go with the one that
is more fuel efficient.
It's more fuel efficient and for the longer years.
Right. And I'll give you a real quick.
So that's almost the best practice.
And there's these other options. If you looked at what's going to be there now until like 2012, there isn't any legislation that's going to really affect us. It'll be phased in. But at some point, there'll be a cost added in. Right? So this is over time. We have no idea when
it'll get really ugly. But I think it'll start off as a slow progression. Right now, the cost is somewhere around $250 per metric ton, which is nothing. It's not making any significant change, and it's all voluntary. Once it becomes mandatory, and that's added on, whatever that number is, we want to be ready for it. So if you're going to have a car that's going to live, that's its life cycle, we buy it here, the average is that number. It's about 50 cents a gallon if you add in the calculation. So you would buy a vehicle that's got 45 miles per gallon instead of 25, because in that life cycle, that's electricity. If it's a building that's going to live this long, when the average cost is way up there somewhere. So it's going to be a different cost depending on its life cycle. And that kind of analysis we're really struggling with, and nobody that we've asked to be experts can say for certain, but that there's definitely going to be something in here in this range that we will be impacted by. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
So this is the drop. This is the combined heat and power plant coming online. This is somewhere there at 25% reduction of our 1990 levels, which is huge in higher education. Yale is at 40% up. Dartmouth is at 60% above their 1990 levels. And they're really struggling to let them go. But then, you know, if we continue to grow and even with reduced buildings, there's going to be a growth in our square footage and our impact. We've got the energy recovery line. That could be a huge jump in that electricity usage. That's room development. What are those options that we can do to reduce that part? What is the part that we can do to reduce for energy conservation efforts in existing buildings? That's the actual footprint of fuels. Pretty big, so we'll spend a lot of energy trying to figure out what we can do to reduce that. Now, this is transportation and some other areas, and then you have your offsets and how those would work. Right now, we finished the initial phase, the asking for ideas, the whole online tool that we use. The event we had, Campus Sustainability Day, we get lots of those ideas out there from different constituents. Now we're into phase two. We're trying to figure out, you know, what are the best options for Cornell and actually do the cost-benefit analysis. So that's a lot of number crunching and what technology is actually feasible. Phase three is to put together a portfolio, and that's where we really work with the budget office. This is realistic that we come up with another X million dollars to do the things that have to be done for us to get to climate neutrality. We'll look at that number. But some people have said that there's an actual date that we don't know when that's going to happen. We can't know yet because we haven't done all that analysis. But it's shown in a number of these diagrams because there was some concern that we were talking about spending money in 2015 to get there, which is impossible for a university our size. So just to give people an idea, that's getting there is going to be a long project. The President's Climate Commitment Implementation Committee thought they would be done September 15th next year, this year, when we finish the project. The plan, that's going to be a long road to get to the end of the So this is, again, this is where we're at. We're at stage two, working on the themes. So renewable energy would be a theme, specific options in labs, energy efficiency, and then working through exactly what those options are so that we have endorsed alternatives from all the different groups that are out there, whether it's maintenance management or the college officers groups have to review to make sure those things are really going to happen. And then figure out the better piece. And even though the deadline for the President's Climate Commitment is September 15th, we have to get it in front of trustees at least in draft form in May. So we're going to do a couple of months ahead of us. And then we can come back with some fine tuning of it before we go public in September. And we will probably do presentations again right after the trustees see it in May. Whenever you want us to come back in that time period, we'll come back with here are the short term options, the mid term options, the over 16 year plan. Beyond 16 years, we're still going to be doing this. So, what is it realistically doing in these short term, mid term? And again, this has to tie into some of the energy. There are cost savings initiatives and there are covers for energy savings because the behavioral change in what we do in our individual offices is going to really impact this. The estimates are somewhere between 15% and 20%, some of the consultants are saying, of what we have to do ourselves to change that, not just the systems,
you know, motion sensor was a more efficient way. But actually, when we've done it, it's really all through the lights off. Those things can have some important and have some significant impacts as well. But I think, and again, this is the timeline and the crunch is where things might be made and basically ready.
Dean, can you tell us about the survey that David Weinstein and those guys are putting together for the countywide thing?
Sure.
What's it going to be, and would that be a good thing for this group to look at, too?
Catherine Stedman, Professor Stedman, and Stedman and McComas, Catherine McComas and Professor Stedman, are working on a survey for us as part of their research. To ask community members, and it's going to go out to 1,000 people in Tompkins
County. 2,000.
2,000? Yeah. So I'm still working on the first presentation. 2,000 to the community members, and it's a random sample. So it'll go to some Cornell people, it'll go to anybody in the county to ask what are their perceptions of some of the bigger projects that may have community impact. And so we try to do a wind turbine project on Mount Pleasant, and kind of just measure the wind. And it got a lot of negative reaction in that neighborhood. So we need to know if there's projects that are going to be proposed like that, that might be big, large scale, some kind of impact in the community. Is that reasonable for us to propose that? One of the ideas was a nuclear reactor floating in the lake. For a number of reasons, that was never considered. But, you know, if somebody comes up with an idea that is cost effective, who's the expert in figuring out if that's one of the benchmarks was that it would be acceptable by the community. And so we have to really review that with a lot of people before we even propose it or go to the mayor's office to talk about it has to cross a city limit or something. So that will be coming out hopefully up to schedule at the end of February, beginning of March, so that we can get the data back in time to get that into the final analysis.
I know it might be too early with all the budgets within the state and the federal government and all the stuff that's going on. But is there anything from the state or federal government that would be applicable, or is it too early because things are still up in the air with the federal budgets and the state?
We have a number of the early 1 to 5 year projects that we've already approached for government funding in a variety of ways. And so you've got Kirby, the Cornell University Renewable Bioenergy Initiative through the Agriculture Experiment Station, which really focuses on biochar. What do you do with ag waste, tree waste and things like that, which has really great possibilities for economic development in upstate New York. So the state was really interested. It went to DOE, Department of Energy, thinks it's great. It'd be probably the largest bioenergy research center. And it's all focused on three different technologies in one spot in the country if we can pull that off. So that's a research endeavor. But the operations group is really supporting that because the gases that come off that will be burned in the central heating plant, which can run biofuels as well as natural gases going to use first. So there'd be some benefit for the operations. And my office has always been promoted as working towards the living laboratory. So if we can find things like that that combine with research, even better. So that's one thing that we've thrown out there for the federal government. There's a few others that are a little longer range that we don't know if they're appropriate yet, so that's the direction we're going. But we have put out feelers for that.
For the state and federal government.
Particularly with, you know, what's being proposed to the economic stimulus package.
Right.
The current campaign.
Right.
Because of the pieces that they put in there for green jobs and green technology, we're already poised for a number of those.
Okay.
And whether or not comes up to New York or not. You could definitely work with a couple of those programs. Any other questions? Directions you want me to head in?
Could you talk just a little bit more about some of the other alternative energy sources that are possibly being considered?
So one for our climate in particular is solar thermal, solar hot water heating. And we've done couple of small tests, and we've got one going up on the combined heat and power plants staff office, and showers and things like that, which would be run by solar thermal, but also Warren Hall's renovation looks like it'll have that, and the experiment station is putting two
installations up off campus to look at that. We don't get enough sun at the right times, and sometimes we really do photovoltaics efficiently. It just takes too long for the payback. But on a cloudy day like today, we get enough IR rays, infrared rays, to heat water. So a good system like that will still function on a cloudy day like this. The panels out here, I think they're still covered with snow right now, but even if they weren't, you wouldn't be getting enough to pay for itself with photovoltaics. So heating hot water makes sense for us across campus, even with the efficiency of the combined heat power plant. So we'll be doing that kind of thing. Some of the bigger scale ideas are biofuels, and Tim Fahey has done a bunch of research on how much you would in biofuel capacity is within a 50-mile radius of Cornell. You don't want to overtax it, you start shipping wood blocks and things like that. So it's really not at the scale that we can do. Middlebury is doing the biofuels plant right now. We've been talking to them about an exchange program of ideas. But we would strip the forest too quickly to really do that as our main heating system. But we could do it, you know, we could do it on a smaller scale for the experiment station. So looking at some solid boilers that can do in-ships and ag waste.
Sure.
One of the ideas, we have Professor Jeff Tester, who's just come on board, who's the sustainable energy systems professor, coal professorship. His big thing that he's been working on, he's the leader in the nation on this, is enhanced geothermal systems, which is digging down almost underground to get hot water. Right now they're using it in Iceland and California and Arizona. Nevada, where the hot water is closer to the surface. We actually sit over the hot spot in the northeast, on the southern end of Cuba Lake. If that becomes economically viable to drill and we have the right kind of rock formations, there's some geology department that doesn't actually know yet, so it's a whole bunch of research before we even consider that. That's one of those technologies that if that hot steam can come up and run turbines to produce electricity when we use the steam to heat campus, which has great potential, but is one of those really far off things. Technology isn't there to drill that deep. It's not viable. We don't know what the geology is, things like that. So that's in the longer range plan. But those technologies are scalable to the point where that would produce our electricity and beyond. So those are some of the things that are on, you know, that one wedge. This is fuel mix and renewable energy. But it's going to take us a while to figure out if those are possible. That might be something we put in the bucket that says that's option B 16 plus years out. To get started on the research so that we could actually do it.
I was curious what we're doing about the transportation and disposal of our coal ash. And in light of recent events, do we have some oversight or other accountability that we hold our disposal sites to so that their sites don't become the type of headline news that we've been reading about elsewhere?
I would refer that question to Jim Adams for the exact legal statement in it, but they've assured me, because I asked the same kind of question, was that it goes to a Department of Environmental Conservation approved facility where it's buried, and it's not a surface pond, and it's not exposed to runoff and stuff that they can get away with in the South, in West Virginia and other places. So in New York State, the DEC rules are strict enough that we're not at liable risk for the same kind of things that we're seeing in the news right now.
Anil, did you see that letter that Jim wrote in the paper about it?
I did.
Yeah.
That's right.
So we can get more information on that if somebody wants to know exactly where it goes and, you know, how it's... Environmental Compliance Office, we do some of those things, but it's the other part of the office, not
mine.
Okay.
I don't know if you can answer this or not, but I read in the Ithaca Journal that U.S. Air, their cover magazine that you give me, is flying the plane for the month of February, is Ithaca, and then the research building is on the cover of it. In fact, I don't know if any of you have seen the picture of it in today's, is it today's paper or yesterday?
Yesterday.
But anyway, I just thought it was sort of like... I'm going to ask you about energy, but I just thought the cover was a little misleading, because when you see Ithaca, you know, it's like a skyscraper or something, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, is there anything in there about Cornell's energy and being green and those kinds of...
I haven't actually seen that. Has anybody seen it?
No.
Okay.
Much these days.
But it does say Cornell is mentioned, and since they had the building on the cover of ours,
you know.
And maybe the Cornell Green or environment was one of the reasons they selected it as to feature in their magazine, but I haven't seen the article.
Or how much detail they, I think they said it's 16 pages.
I'll take a look at it and get back to you.
You don't have to do that. I can look myself. I just wondered if they had contacted you folks for information or some of the information to do the story.
That's one of the things the communication subcommittee for PCCIC has worked on is getting basic sheets on what's going on,
right,
so that we can get that out there to the press, because they don't know, and so they don't know who to ask. Mm-hmm. And hopefully my email address isn't on the bottom of all of those pages, but the idea is to get that out there so that people recognize that all of these things that we're doing and put together are a huge effort. And we have the hydro plant, right? I did an informal survey. Half the graduating students didn't even have a hydro plant. It's the only one in higher education. And Ezra Cornell built the 10th dock and all that kind of stuff. It's a good story. We just never communicated that. It's 2% of our electricity. Small percentage, but it's a big number when you look at it.
You mentioned Geneva, which is where I'm from. And I noticed that you didn't mention anything about wind farms. Is that something that might be considered in the future? I guess I'm thinking Geneva specifically. There are certain areas right near the station that probably would do very well with that type of energy, but I didn't know if that was something that was being considered.
It's in the portfolio. Part of the reason I'm not talking too much about wind is I'm not sure about community reactions here. The CAP and our inventory of greenhouse gases focused on the Ithaca campus first. Mm-hmm. President Swarton recognized that this was a huge effort, and we tried to bite off the entire university, go to Qatar and look at the medical college. We'd never get it done. We just didn't have the resources to actually look at it in depth. Mm-hmm. So that was a phased approach. We do this at the campus, and then we'll go out and look at things in upstate New York, and we'll make peace with Weill and figure out their numbers, which I don't have. I couldn't tell you what their footprint is. Two conference calls with them. But Geneva is one of the things that we've talked about. I'm forgetting the gentleman's name who's up there because the physical plant.
John Vanderwood.
Of what we can do to offer help, and if we're going to start to do, particularly some of the offsets. We can do things on a regional basis, and the wind is more appropriate near Geneva. Does that give us offset credits? Because we're not going to get to zero on the campus by itself. Can't do it.
You want to talk a little about Earth Day?
I don't know what we're doing for Earth Day. So Earth Day, we always do some kind of little event on Hope Plaza with the students, and I really let them, the students at the same building, all these different apps, run that themselves. This year, we're really trying to get some of the information out there about what's going on with the Climate Action Plan, and some of the other staff focus groups, much like Green Team, CIT's Green Team, and some of the other groups that are out there that are doing things, Green Purchase and whatever. And particularly with the CAPS, what the impact would be on behavioral change. So we're trying to get some of that information out, and there is an agreement whether or not we do it all on Hope Plaza, or we try to do it broken up. How do we get the word out to lots of different people around the campus? If anybody has ideas of things that have worked successfully with the whole campus, kind of, and even Geneva, you know, how do we get stuff out there? I've offered to do a webcast. Nobody wants to watch me on the web, so in the box, and somebody has a better idea. But that is going to be one of the big days that we try to roll stuff out, because we will have better numbers on what the options are, and can give the phase two information to the rest of the campus.
So do we send our ideas to you?
Sure. DRK5.
Say it again.
DRK5.
We have a very active Earth Day group in Geneva.
Okay. So
we'll get the word out.
And Pat, that's at the Cornell. No, you've done such a superb job.
Sorry, that was really fast.
This
was
very
great. Well, thank you, Jim.
And good luck with the May
team.
And good luck with the budget and office too in the future.
Some of the things we're proposing are costly.
Yeah.
And the paybacks are within existing things we do in buildings now, but they're on a much larger scale. So
it's tough time to get investment now in anything.
But these would actually, be, in the long run, pay off better than our investments. So there's some leverage here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
How much is it going to cost me?
It's generating power.
So we're going to move on and hear a report from our EA representative to the Faculty Senate.
The Faculty Senate has not met since the last time I reported on their meeting, but I will be attending the next meeting.
Are they going to be talking about Milstein at that meeting, the Faculty Senate?
I believe they will be.
I haven't seen the agenda, but I'll look at it and report back.
Thank you, Alan. Report from staff on the survey steering committee.
Okay, things are moving forward. The first two focus groups are scheduled for late February, early March. Based on the response they get from those, and they're going to decide what to do with the rest of the focus groups. The other major thing that was discussed last time and the question I brought up and that they're looking at is about, for the actual survey, which is in the fall, taking questions from groups that might be interested, like the Family Services Committee, like the EA and so forth, and they've kind of turned it over to the methodology team, which is a subgroup, and they're compiling a list of relevant groups, and I've thrown the EA in there, along with Family Services and some others. So there may be an opportunity, and there may be some discussion with this methodology group about things we might be interested in finding out from staff and so forth, and getting some questions in on the survey. And that's it.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions? I'll move on to the report from the chair. I'm going to read an email. I'm pleased on Leon's behalf to inform you that our director, AAD Office for Diversity and Inclusiveness, Leon Lawrence, has accepted an important Cornell position as Associate Director, Office of Minority Educational Affairs, and Director, State Programs Office. Leon has a new position. He's still here at Cornell. And just want to congratulate him.
Oh, thank you. Don't stand.
Thank you.
Two things. Cornell has a partnership with the state of New York as a number of universities and colleges. The Equal Opportunity Program and the Higher Educational Opportunity Program. Basically, they're the same program, but one is for private colleges and one is for public. So since Cornell is a combination of both, both programs are here. So students throughout the state of New York, and like I said, with the state of New York, working with colleges and universities, what they do are students that are from low-income families, students that perhaps have are attending high schools, well, the whole school system, where compared, say, like to schools that have all access to everything. So we're in low-income neighborhoods. Like these students, they're the top students in their high schools and what have you. And what happens is Cornell works with the state of New York to help those students enter Cornell. That's like a big overview of the program. So that's the program that I'm going to be working very closely with. And also, well, I'll just leave it there. Just as an overview, that's the program. It's a partnership with the state of New York. A number of colleges and universities, both private and public within the state, has such partnerships. So I'll be working with those students. Roughly, probably there's roughly about 200 students in that situation. They have to meet certain eligibility guidelines and whatever, but that's what I'll be doing.
It's good that you'll still be here at Cornell. Leon almost left a year ago and went to D.C.
Yeah.
But
that's another
story. Another story in
yeah.
the book.
And then my office is actually here in this building in room 227. That's where my new office is located.
Mm. Day Hall.
Day Hall, yes.
As I mentioned earlier, we did make a request to see if President Scorton would be available to meet with staff in the Cornell community again later this semester, sometime later in the spring. We had an exec meeting this past week, and we talked about reducing the EA's budget, the remainder of the EA's budget, by 10% for the rest of the year. I don't know if that's something that we'd pick up again for the following year, because I don't know what would be in there yet to make that type of decision. And I'll ask Alan if we could possibly work with Ari on getting a resolution to actually do that.
Okay, I'll be happy to do that.
Outstanding. It's pretty much what's left. So we just try to reduce our expenses by 10% of what we had, and we talked about it at the retreat, and we talked about it after the president's meeting with us that we had. And we have no interested, or Enda, were you going to bring an interested person?
I'm behind you.
Oh, you did. Hi. Hi, I'm Brian Cornell.
Hi,
I'm David Ferguson. Nice to meet you. You work over with Enda?
Other instruction, but not with
you. Oh, okay.
We didn't get that far.
Well, we're welcome to have you. Do you have any questions for us right now?
I am the first today.
Oh, great. You're always welcome. That's all. Any questions for me at this time? Okay. Move on to approval of our meeting minutes. We'll start with December 17th, 2008. Give everybody a minute to look at those.
I would like to make a motion that we approve the minutes as submitted.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
And Bill? All in favor? Any opposed? Same. Okay, we'd like to pass approval of the minutes. That was the January 7th?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I believe that's like December. Okay, now we'll move on to reviewing the January 23rd, 2009 meeting minutes. A little shorter.
I'll make a motion that we approve the January 23rd minutes as submitted.
Second. I have another second. Bill? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. We'll pass the January 23rd, 2009 Employee Assembly meeting minutes. And we'll move on to our committee report, our favorite part. The Executive Committee. We did talk a lot about the future as far as what we're going to do to support staff. And get out there. And still, it's the same game plan. We just don't have all the information that we need at this point. We have moved on trying to get the president. We have moved on reserving spaces for forums in case something does pan out in the future. Other than that, I think we just keep continuing to do a good job at communicating the information that we have and getting it out there and be supportive. Anything to add?
Well, I had a thought. In light of your
earlier comments, Brian, about the president's interest in the in an active, I'm reading it to mean an active EA, an EA that communicates, an EA that's involved. I was wondering if some committee, maybe the communications committee, could look into, if they haven't, whether there was such a structure at Iowa, where the president came from and had long affiliations in through the administrative ranks. Maybe he's thinking of some way of operating that might help inform, particularly since we're talking about the charter and reviewing that, if there would be sort of a mini best practices search as to how other employee assemblies work. And
we did ask him, and it was quite some time ago when we had the idea of looking at restructuring the makeup of the EA, and I don't believe you were EA member at that time, and he was supportive, but he pretty much left it in the employees' hands. He didn't want to be involved. And I believe, Pat, have you and Leon and your committee, have you guys got to the representation part of the EA? And remember Hazel looked at some other, and was Iowa one of the ones that was looked at?
I think so, but okay. Hazel did a lot of that research, so okay. We're going to have to catch up with her and see what she did.
Okay, different thought. Because if it's a working group and it's something that this group here agrees, it would be good to look at it as a model. So, yeah. It's always been, seemed like Dean mentioned the same thing, how do we communicate, how do we get out there to everybody? It's been the struggle with... All groups and organizations, how do we communicate with everybody? And how do we, as EA members, how do we represent our entire, all of our constituents effectively and fairly? And hopefully we do come up with something, and that was the idea of a staff council where you appoint people from different units. That's I think the only way, other than the mass emails that go out. But there has to be some other models out there.
I don't know. It seems like early on, when I first joined the EA, it seems like some best practices were looked at from other schools.
Oh, yeah.
But some schools don't even have such an organization, right. I remember. But it seems like early on, this has been done before.
Oh, gosh, yeah. We've done a lot of research on that. And the majority of, I will tell you, Ari and our group is looking at the charter. We are so far involved as mm-hmm. far as a charter. The other groups, it's just very basic and very simple. They're
right.
not as extensive as what we've got here. So mm-hmm. I don't know if we want to maybe take heed of that.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we want to start from day one again. At least
right.
I don't.
Right.
Well, you make a change if it's determined that the current way of how the EA is running isn't effective or it's not meeting the goals or the expectations. But we really don't even have a good measurement of if we are or if we're not. I just think this group, from the discussions we've had, just have felt that there would be easier ways of representing the entire university, and that would be having representatives from all areas of the university.
And haven't we also looked at this as at various retreats that we've had?
Yes,
we've
have.
Looked at. So I'm just saying it's not new. We've done this before.
Yeah.
I think, and the president was... my interpretation was he was just supporting. He was supporting us. Again, just mentioned he wants to utilize us. We're his soldiers out there getting the information. He's gonna seriously consider anything we bring to him, and he's gonna take our ideas and suggestions and thoughts. And that is it's a big compliment to him that he again said this in front of the trustees. So it shows that he values us as a group. So, and we did get him a list of, I don't know if it is in his hands yet, it's 15 to 20 suggestions. For instance, a workshop to help managers manage employees who have been given extra duties with no compensation as an employee is not the position isn't
fired because of the freeze. Someone's taking the burden of that. Suggestions like that that we gather from the retreat. And we also, there's a list of five different issues. You know, local units aren't hearing about the economic crisis. There's people that are just out there blind. They don't know what's happening. So we did get him. We may not be in his hands yet, but we did get him what he's asked for at this point. But we need to continue doing that. Right. We're going to move on to, it's me, Staff Recognition and Awards Committee. We met yesterday. There were only two of us there. So we did not vote on the next George Peter Award recipient. But it was Dennis and I. The others could not make it, unexpectedly. But we did talk about creating a new award that all EA members could choose their own candidate and present them with an award. And what we are doing, this committee is working on criteria. We don't want just anybody you want. We will have criteria, and we're going to try to move this forward, too. And we're just going to offer another award. If you're not familiar with it, we feel in this time of day and what's happening, the more awards we can get out, the better. But we're going to draft that, and we'll have a resolution coming here shortly in the near future. You might even get an email from me asking for input on the creation and the wording of this type of award. Kind of like the unsung hero we talked about at the retreat.
Cool.
And so we will be meeting again. We'll have more attendance, hopefully. Jason is not here for the communication committee. There was a resolution ready to be on the table, but he asked me if he wasn't here to ask Julie if she was ready, but Julie is not here, so I'm just going to pass on communications. Finance Committee, Alan?
Yes, I'd like to report on the expenses incurred in connection with the energy fair and the president's address. I am in receipt of the various expenditures. And subject to two qualifications, I wanted to just give what I would call an interim report until it's final. As of now, we have expended or charged to our budget $6,070.51. That includes an estimate of $909 from Barton Hall in connection with all of that activity, which we're going to get finalized so I can report to you. That also includes an extra, in quotes, $1,000 in connection with the audio arrangement. You call that audio arrangement with the provider of that. We were going to, in effect, net an expense of $1,500 because that party was going to make a $1,000 contribution. I'm informed that the $1,000 contribution went into the emergency grant fund. So in the end of the day, where that comes out in terms of expenses and income, if you will, that the EA accrues, remains to be seen. If you look at it from the big picture, that $1,000 is still, in a sense, within the EA because it's part of the emergency grant fund. So if you don't include that $1,000, which is what we had anticipated that the net would be $1,500 instead of $2,500, then the total expenses are $5,070. So that may have to await an accounting adjustment. But other than those two, the numbers are very firm and right down to the dollar. And cents. They all came in as anticipated. Sea laundry, $226. The garage parking permit, $75. The signer, $100. Mailing expenses, $321. Printing at Olin Copy Center, $726. Programs, $100. The plaque for recognition, $91. The dining bill, $788. That deserves a little estimate. There was an arrangement where we'd pay them a flat fee for the box lunches that we gave to volunteers and such, which we did. And then there was an arrangement that if we didn't bring in paid fees, I think it was $700, that we would pay them the difference between what dining took in and that number, because they didn't want to do the event unless they were guaranteed to make $700.
Right.
So it turned out they did not make $700. They came out $300 and some odd short of that. So between the box lunches and the guaranteed portion, that cost us $788. And then the CIT bill for media services was $233. And then again, Barton Hall, we were waiting for the final, but the estimate was $909.
So what was the total?
So the total, depending on which way you calculate, if you look at the 15...
I would take the money that went in the grant fund, and I wouldn't put it on our balance sheet. It's not income for us. So I would just say that's...
So if that's out, then the full $2,500 would be charged to us. And so that would make it $6,070.51, pending the Barton Hall detail.
What is Barton
Which
Hall?
Could be an additional...
We had to pay for the curtain, the facility, to use it.
Oh.
You got that estimate.
You know what I thought you were saying? I thought you were saying Bailey Hall. You're saying Barton. Okay.
Right, yes. I think I was, unless I had a word salad moment.
Hall came to
No, the
mind.
Email that you actually had sent, that was the estimate. So that's 909. I don't expect it to be radically different, but...
But that's included.
In that number, yes. The 909 is in there,
which leaves us what for the year.
Well, I was going to say we've got to be in deficit.
No.
Yes.
Because I want to ask a clarification, because our budget's around $9,400,
right.
But this year Peggy went in and I thought she got approval for the president's addresses, $15,000, something like that, to do two of them or whatever. Isn't that $6,000 going towards that? It's not towards our actual budget.
Right. That's the amount. I haven't talked about budget yet.
Yeah.
All I talked about
total
was expenses.
Yeah, the expenses.
All I talked about expenses. And it is indeed my understanding that this is not out of our budget. Although we budgeted $1,000 for this event. So whether or not that's going to be charged out. But the balance over that, it does not come out of our budget.
Yeah.
I haven't mentioned budget yet. This is just the expenses that came out of this event.
So we're rolling the energy fair up into the president's address? Is that what I'm hearing? Because my assumption was the 15 was just for the president's address, but we kind of rolled a couple things in. Are we expecting that the 15,000 is going to take care of the energy fair as well?
Yes. That's my expectation.
Yeah, that's what I would count.
Mine too.
Okay. That's good.
Well, of course we're going to.
Yeah.
So then we're standing okay.
Yeah, I see.
If that is all covered by another, or most of that is covered by some other funding source, we're sitting okay as far as what we have. And
well, the 10% cut, I guess it was approved, right?
We were going to vote on it. I'm going to do a quick resolution.
Okay.
I have to bring it.
So what is that, roughly $900 or $1,000?
$940.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good legal
stuff. Right.
$840 budget.
Right.
So I'll work with Ari and bring back to the next meeting the resolution.
We got supplemented pretty good.
Yeah, that's like a lot of money left between now and June 30th.
Right, and I believe this money comes from a higher budget, the Office of Assemblies, and I wouldn't believe we roll over $8,000 in the next year's budget. I mean, I think it goes back Office of Assemblies, and maybe they'll give us a little, but. That's to be determined once Peggy gets her numbers and we can sit down again and make our request.
And that should be an OA account. That shouldn't have anything to do with the 15,000, which she actually got it. I don't even know.
I have never gotten a
10,000. Yeah, I don't know that we got that.
Yeah.
But my other question, though, is the $9,400 budget. If we're taking a voluntary 10% reduction in that budget, my understanding is any reductions you take are permanent. So I just want to be sure we know or we clarify that.
I think it's true.
You take money away, it's permanent. We don't get it back again. So if we're offering to give up $1,000 of our budget, I would love to have that clarified, make certain that it is permanent.
It would also be the wording of the resolution, too.
Yeah, but I mean, we have to... as the president has said, he sent these notices around to units and departments. You make these cuts, you're not going to get them back. So I'm just pleased if you could make certain
that is the doesn't carry. Hold true on this, because otherwise we've just that's eliminated $1,000 of our budget that we will never see again.
So we'll do.
Thank you.
Although, and then also, if the president's address is going to always be continued to be supplemented from someone else, our budget is way off.
That's right.
Way higher than it should be. Mm-hmm. And maybe we should, but let's, yeah, if you can clarify it, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Alan. Personnel policy?
We have only met just the once. Hopefully we will get something going again mid to late February.
Okay. Thanks, Pat.
Sure.
Oh, that's right. You did finance. You did the finance.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
It's all in my head.
No, that's good. IOC, Peter?
Yes. We have a position available for a parliamentarian who is a member of the executive committee. Just a quick reminder, parliamentarian helps ensure that the meetings run smoothly, that we follow Robert's Rules of Order, and to be a reference point for charter questions and things like that. So I'm going to collect nominations now and also via email. I'll send an email out to everyone, and then hopefully next meeting we'll be able to vote on a new parliamentarian.
Okay, and just to clarify that, Hazel had already in the past stepped down from parliamentarian position. We're still working on whether she's got it to be. She resigned but hasn't. So she's just got to send an official, yes, I still want to be on the EA, and she's still going to be on the EA, but she's not parliamentarian. We haven't had a parliamentarian for quite some time now.
Yeah.
So this call is to be on the exec committee for the EA.
Do we need a parliamentarian?
We don't, but we could definitely use an extra hand at our executive meetings. That's the main thing. One more person there. So because if there's four and two aren't there, it's two people talking.
Yeah. And nobody wants to hear me talk. So do we have any nominations right now for parliamentarian?
It's in the charter.
Any who? Yeah.
Nominations for parliamentarian?
Any volunteers?
I'll nominate Gary Stewart.
Okay. Any other nominations?
I would second the nomination.
When does the executive committee meet?
It's every other Wednesday, so it would be next Wednesday. The time varies, right? It's like 11, sometimes 12,
lunch
1,
time.
Lunch hour time.
12 to 1 or 1 or 2.
Yeah, my biggest challenge is I have a meeting every Wednesday in the Rotary Club down in Ithaca that I'm a member of. So I've been skipping it every other week when we meet. So I'd be willing to do this if we could figure out another time on this group committee, because I can't blow off Rotary forever.
And Peter, you're going to send an email out to everyone so they have a chance. So it's 2 weeks to get nominations. Nominate yourself, nominate someone else.
And the person gets like a white wig and a gavel.
And a gavel.
And a waistcoat.
And a gavel.
You have to carry the Robert's Rules in your arm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Read it from the cover.
The pocket.
Yeah.
It's pretty much more the importance of the position hasn't been in making sure the meetings are running according to Robert's Rules of Order, like our charter. But it's like I said, it's more valuable in the exact meeting when we have one extra person there that is giving input on our making our agenda and how we're going to move forward.
But if you are a parliamentarian, that's still your responsibility because you meet all the parliamentarian duties. So it's just
is it like being a bouncer?
Yeah, you interrupt people a lot. It's really fun.
You get to say point of order on the point.
Okay.
Like or bring in a baseball bat.
A fraternity sergeant at arms.
Right. All right.
Yes.
Question, IOC question. I don't know who to ask this of. We are still down at least two people that I know of. Where are we with all of this? They're dropping like flies.
Well,
they don't go.
We're three interested. Potentially interested individuals.
But what does that mean, potentially interested?
They express interest. They just don't come here for us to meet them.
Should we not be out there recruiting them or asking them to come? Or we?
I think Beth McKinney has been working with one of our last potential EA members. Peter has also seen the emails. They're inviting the person.
Everyone here is welcome to bring whoever you want or to encourage people to either come to the meetings just to sit in and listen and have pizza or to sign up online or both.
And the application is completely, right, Ari? There's no more signatures at this point?
Right, it's just a vote by the EA.
So they fill out...
What do you mean signatures?
You know, the signature...
Oh, all that 25
right.
Stuff.
So they give an advertisement for us in the paper, but we can't really spare the money for any other kind of...
So pretty much if someone's interested, they go to the Employee Assembly website and they look at the vacancies. Just correct me.
I saw emails about previous meetings. Did they get a notice about today's meeting? I think so.
I don't know. That one was invited to our retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Been invited for the last 3-4 meetings.
Yeah.
And other than going there and bringing the person here.
Well, I guess I'm not thinking about just maybe these 1 or 2 or 3 people that may be interested. I just don't understand. We've been without these two members for 5 months or more. I don't understand why we're not out there recruiting more. I mean, if I could bring 3 people from Geneva to be on the EA, I would. But somehow we've got to get it out there that this is a, you know, we're sitting here tooting our horn about how great this committee is and how the president is so anxious to work with us. Like, somehow we've got to get that out there, and we've got to get people on this group.
And last year we were down 5 for almost the entire year.
This is crazy.
Well, I know the communications committee right now is working on a lot of different ways to let people become aware of the EA and to try to recruit people for both committees and the employee assembly. And
also some of the suggestions was to the president was to... you know, somehow make administrators, it's kind of urging employees to get involved with the EA. I think 3 of the suggestions are in that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also this time of what's happening now. The last thing I feel employees want to do is to go do something that's going to take them away from already tough work duties and responsibilities. So here you're a 1 FTE, and now you're doing 2 people's jobs, and now you join the EA, and it takes away from you a little. So people are a little nervous about that.
I think maybe if the communications committee maybe also, I guess Dennis left on it. But anyway, maybe with the paw print and other ways to continue, you know, I guess we've tried a lot of different things over the years, but I think Pat makes a good point that... maybe there's another way, or we got to think outside the box or brainstorm to,
sure.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, if Dennis was here, I'd say this too. The puppet doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
It comes down to making
mm-hmm.
personal asks and,
right.
and doing them outreach.
Through the network.
Right. Someone to see something in hard copy and say, oh, yeah, I'll do that.
Right.
So.
I make a motion to extend the meeting for 5 minutes.
Second.
Got a second. Okay, let's extend for 5 minutes. It's a good point. My closest colleagues are in AAP, where I work, and the reason I haven't asked anyone because Leon is also in AAP, and we're the smallest college. But now with Leon leaving, I could try to recruit someone again at AAP. But it's a matter of just bringing someone you know. There are people out there. Even though people are nervous, but there's people out there that are interested. And maybe that'll be a challenge for me to everybody here, is next meeting. See if you can bring somebody, even
yeah.
if they're not interested in being on the EA, your spouse, your coworker, your boss, bring someone just to come sit in on a meeting. That'll be my challenge. See if we can get somebody here. Let's see if that type of will work. And then I also think if we do pass a resolution to cut our budget, by 10% with the checking, the double checking, as what Pat mentioned. Dennis had mentioned he'd give us a good paw print coverage for something like that. And maybe we could throw that message in that as well. But there's more than just paw print. So yes, we do need to think outside the box. And somebody, one of our many committees or somebody needs to be in charge of this function. Since we go an entire year shorthanded.
Mm-hmm.
But then complain about the overworked.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If
sounds good.
I will task Jason with bringing this up as a top priority in the communications committee and see what he comes up with. I know they have been doing some work because they were ready for something for us today. Let's see if we can move on. University benefits. Nothing to report. Employee education.
You missed the EGS.
Employee education, nothing to report. Sorry about that. I will move up to the EGF, emergency grant fund.
We were going to have a meeting last week. It didn't happen. We are scheduled to meet again tomorrow. The newest thing we're looking at right now is a name change for the fund. We're throwing around a lot of very creative ideas that we will bring forward to the EA as well as the changes for the charter. Ari's been working with us on that, and we appreciate his efforts.
As long as they're called Chili Chef Fund.
No, we won't. Just another point of interest that I think we need to know about is, as we talk about the emergency grant fund, we've also talked about the criteria. Initially, it was started out to be if you have a fire or a flood or something
right.
very catastrophic, non-medical, that made you go to get one of these funds. We're kind of thinking about that criteria right now with energy costs up and everything else. So we're working that in, and we're going to bring that forward. But in light of that, Mary Opperman has come forward now with the hardship fund.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think there's real clarification yet on how that fund, what the criteria is to be a part of that fund. So I think it's going to be very important, and I think I mentioned this at the last mm-hmm. meeting, that there's some communication between the EGF and Mary's office mm-hmm. to not do a conflict in those two funds, what the purpose of that hardship fund is with relation to the EGF.
That communication should go to my office. I don't think directly to Mary. Lynette Chappelle Williams
is Lynette in charge of
the
that?
Hardship fund person.
Maybe send out an email and he can find the information on the side and let you know.
That would be
but
great.
It's a good point. You don't need to do a double effort.
Cross
over. Oh, that was going to be my question to you. Knowing about the hardship, I was wondering what the connection was.
Well, we haven't gotten that far. Mm-hmm. I think as far as renaming it, that kind of once we found out about that hardship fund, we really need to take another, just a small step back and make sure we're not duplicating efforts. So, but we meet tomorrow, so hopefully we'll have more info at the next meeting.
Good. And ad hoc charter review committee?
We are meeting next Tuesday, I believe, it's on the calendar.
Okay.
We are so close.
Okay.
Very close.
So close.
But not the second, not the
not the second piece
okay.
yet. We haven't gotten to that yet. We're trying to finish the first.
Let's finish the first piece. Okay, we're going to pass on new business in open forum, and can I get a motion
to adjourn?
I have one.
Second.
Okay, thank you.
Building
well, the first piece is the whole chart.
Can I, as members of the finance committee, I need to be by phone. Can I schedule this meeting with whoever UA is meeting with?
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.